This is kind of also my hot button issue because I've been working in this and watching the different jurisdictions make decisions. And the short-term rental industry is under fire. It's happened because of affordability.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Living in Denver podcast. And I am super excited today to be joined by Amy Nakos, who is just an expert in Summit County. And Summit County is home to some of the most popular ski resorts in the world. So if you've been thinking or have thought about having a second property, an investment property, like you're going to want to tune into this for sure. So welcome, Amy. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Alex.
You're welcome. I'm excited about this because, like I said, you know, we get asked this all the time as the I-70 drive gets tougher and tougher to make, right? We don't make day trips anymore because it's kind of a pain in the butt, you know, taking 4 hours to drive to have 4 hours of skiing. This comes up a lot. You're close in mileage to the Denver market, but I'm sure there's some pretty drastic changes. But before we kind of get into the markets, you know, difference in real estate, what to expect, like, give me some of your backstory. Like, tell me how you got into this business and, start wherever you want to start.
Well, that sounds great. Thanks, Alex, again, for having me. Amy Nakos, I live in Frisco, Colorado, and I work in the Summit County market. So how did I get here? Well, I was actually a commercial litigation attorney in Chicago. And, my husband and I decided that we were done being in the city and we wanted to move to the mountains for lifestyle and to raise our family. At that time, we had a one-year-old and he's 21 now. So that was 20 years ago. When I came in, yeah, I know, still here. Everybody asked me, why didn't you just keep practicing law? And I had a one-year-old, right? So at that time, moving to a new community, was I going to set up a new law practice? I didn't know. I considered it. But my husband and I at that point in time decided that we were going to use real estate as a way to build wealth for our family. As a lot of, you know, Alex, you know, this is what we do. This is what we've been doing for a long time. You work with a lot of investors. So that was 20 years ago when we decided that that was an approach we were going to take. So we both got our real estate license. And so I sort of accidentally fell into this. You know, we're looking for our own investments. We built a development. I sold the units. Next thing you know, I'm a realtor. And that was 20 years. And that's what I'm still doing. So, and I still have an active law license. So,
yeah. So how has law, just out of curiosity, because I just found that out about you a little bit ago with being a lawyer. How does that tie into, I mean, helping you be in the real estate business? Because I know we can practice limited law, right, in the state of Colorado. But how does that, what's the benefits there?
I think I look at everything a little bit differently. So I was a litigation attorney. So I can look at everything from what's the worst case scenario, like let's say it gets really bad. What does that mean? So I can account for that backwards, if you will, when I'm helping my clients. I can say, okay, this is really what it means at the end of the day. If it gets really bad, this is how it's going to look. But it does allow me to read contracts and write things maybe with a little bit more proficiency, but I in no way attempt to be people's attorneys when I'm working with them as a real estate agent, nor do I purport to be. And, you know, there's times people will say, oh, Amy, can you just write this provision? And I have to go to ChatGPT because that's not, you know, it wasn't what I practiced or what I do, but I do have a different eye for things, I would say. Yeah.
Sure. And I know the markets are probably different. And I mean, like I said, you know, I'm down in Denver, right, for the most part, and Summit County is, what, 80 miles away. So it's, and you look on a map and you're like, well, this is kind of your backyard, right? But it's not just your backyard. Like, it's over the divide. Like, it's a solid drive. So our listeners here might understand the Denver market, right? They know inventory is down. They know, you know, our median price is being around that 600 mark, depending on the city. So let's lay some groundwork here before we start talking about some of the nitty gritty of what makes the properties different. Like, if someone were to ask you, what's the market like in Summit County, right? What's kind of the pitch there? What does it look like these days?
Good. And I'm going to go even a little bit 30,000 foot out from that to give a sense of the market. We are, only 80 miles away from Denver, but a completely different climate and a completely different market. We are a resort market. And in the entire market, we have a total of 35,000 properties. That's it. So on the market at any given time, we might have 300 or 400 available properties on the market, with more than half of those being over $1 million. All right. So it's tiny. It's a tiny market. Having said that, though, if you were to ask me what's going on with the market, I write a monthly newsletter and I analyze the market every month. And I have been waiting to see changes. I'm like, are interest rates going to make things go down? Nope. Yeah. Are the short-term rental regulations we have going to make things go down? Now, maybe in some neighborhoods, but it is a steady eddy market. The lines are going straight across. It is, you know, we're still selling the properties. Certainly not like the frenzy of COVID, but we're before that. You know, before COVID, we're seeing similar trends. And so it's still good. The market is still good. It's still moving. And we have demand from all over the country to have a vacation home. So we do have demand. Like you might have in Denver, you might have demand from people who are looking to upsize or downsize in the market, or people who are moving in. But there's like a legitimate, I'm living here. Up here, they're not moving to live here. They're moving to vacation here. Most of the buyers.
Interesting. So, that's, you know, it sounds similar to what most of the country is experiencing, but yeah, I could imagine. I mean, you have, what are the ski resorts in Summit County? Breckenridge, Keystone. Is A Basin fall in Summit?
It does.
Does Loveland fall in Summit?
It does not, but Copper Mountain is our fourth. So Loveland.
And Copper Mountain. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so you're getting people, you know, from all over the country that are searching for these mountains, right? And that's, I mean, whenever we go on vacation, even if we're going, you know, to Telluride or we're going to Durango or Steamboat, like, I mean, the first thing we do when we go out to breakfast is pick up that little old real estate magazine, you know what I mean? That still exists. And we're like, ooh, honey, I wonder what stuff it's for. And you're like, ooh, it's $3 million. And then you read further and you're like, 1/8 share. Okay. That's a real thing, huh? So, and I'd imagine during COVID, when people started getting more remote, it probably just exacerbated the problem of inventory. And for those of you listening, like when you say there's 35,000 houses in Summit County and 300 to 400 are coming on at any given time, I mean, I don't know what that percentage is off the top of my head, but that sounds like
one. That's 1%, right?
I know most people move every 8 to 10 years here in Denver. That number just keeps on increasing. And that number in Summit County has just got to be astronomical. Because I'm assuming when someone owns a property, like they only sell for life-changing matters, not because they just want to sell the house, right? Like once you have a property there, the values go up so rapidly that like you're in it, it's going to be handed down to your kids. Like it's a legacy buy for a lot of people in the mountain communities.
That is true. It is. But then we also have people who are kind of in and out because they're investors. So they might've bought it for an investment and then they're looking to move the money into another product. So we'll see that. So we do a lot of 1031 exchanges, but we do have a number of people who just hold them for a long time.
And I get people all the time, right? As we mentioned, the drive's getting worse and worse. It's getting tougher and tougher to make those day trips. So, you know, even us, like we'll go up on a Friday, we'll stay there, you know, Friday night, we'll ski Saturday, we'll stay Saturday night, we'll ski Sunday. So we can at least get a couple of days in for the drive. The whole risk reward, like unless we're staying up there, almost doesn't make sense. And so I get a ton of people that are trying to crunch numbers on ski properties. I've always struggled with it because of things like HOAs and just understanding the ins and outs of owning a ski property. So when someone calls you and they're like, hey, I want to buy a second place. I live here in Denver, want to buy a second home or ski condo or something, like, what should people know and expect when walking into this? Is it an investment? Are they going to make money? Is it a lifestyle? Like, how does that all shake out?
I have this conversation a lot. So I'm just going to give you the real general. General to a little bit more of the nitty gritty about what's changed in the last couple of years. So generally speaking, you're not going to make money on this. People who are investors and looking to put 20% down and cover their costs with rent for mortgage, taxes, HOA. Those people are like the true investors, right? And they're looking for ways to have that immediate income thrown off the property. Well, that doesn't happen. So in Summit, generally speaking, if you pay cash, 100% cash, and you put it in a short-term rental pool, you can expect maybe 2 to 3% return after your expenses.
Wow.
Cash. Okay. It used to be that I would tell people about 50% LTV, so 50% down, 50% cash, or 50% down, 50% loan, will break even. In the last few years, maybe since interest rates have gone up, that number has gotten even worse. So we did some analysis. It was maybe about a year ago, and we just picked a couple Keystone units. So in the Village, River Run, Keystone, and pulled the rental income, and you needed to put down 68% to break even. So if you're doing 10 or 20% down, you're subsidizing the property.
Gotcha. So when you say break even, so explain where the income is coming from. Is this long-term rental? That doesn't make sense because you can't use it, right? Is this, you know, midterm rental? Is this all STR, Airbnb, VRBO stuff?
So the numbers that we run are the STR, Airbnb. We get those numbers from property management companies. So we have a lot of property management companies up here that manage the short-term rentals, right? So they book the nightly bookings, they go clean the unit, they handle the keys, they handle the guests, so that the owners are pretty much hands-off. They're just receiving the money. In exchange for that property management service, you're paying, you know, about 30% of the gross rental income to the property manager. And you're also then covering your taxes and your HOA and any damages or anything that happens to the property. That's not part of the 30%. If they have to replace a toilet or something like that, you know, you're paying for that. So that those are the numbers. So the income you get from the nightly rentals that you receive, the income you receive after the property management fees is what I'm talking about. However, gotcha. Yeah, when you're shopping, you're going to see a lot of gross rental income. You're going to say this property can earn you $100,000 gross rental income. So if you're running your numbers off the gross rental income, you need to probably take 30% off of that, because that's what the property management company is going to take, unless you're going to rent it on your own. And I have people who do that. And so if you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to make the numbers work a little better, that's the first step for the secret sauce for making more money.
Yeah. But managing it yourself, like, woo, I could see that being almost a full-time job.
I mean, you have to kind of be married to your phone, I would say, and yeah, be able to handle those inquiries along with having a service up here, like a cleaning service or an inspection service. So you're the one now taking the leads, you're doing the bookings, you're managing your cleaners. And but I mean, if you think about it, let's say that you're going online and you're looking to go find an Airbnb, and do you put out a number of inquiries at the same time, or do you put out one and wait for the response and then put out another and wait for the response? No, you put out a whole bunch at the same time. So the person who responds to you first, or the person, you know, who's most engaged, is probably, you might just go with them because you're like, oh, these people will be great to work with.
100%. So now let's say I wanted to buy an Airbnb, right? Let's just say it's a, you know, a condo, because I'm assuming that's going to be the majority of them. I can't imagine many single families working too well as an Airbnb, but maybe I'm wrong. Like how much can I spend up there? So, all right, Amy, you're helping me. I want to be able to spend some time at this place that I just bought. Like, with those numbers to roughly break even, like, how much time can I spend there versus how much I have to rent it out?
Here's the good news is that when we run those numbers, occupancy is usually around 140 nights a year. That's kind of mid. 120, you can, almost every property can get about 100 to 120. 140 is about medium. And then we'll see numbers up to 180, 190 in places like Beaver Run, which is a conference center. at the resort in Breckenridge, they just have more density because of the conferences. So you get half the year. Pretty good. Now the most density that you're going to have is going to be on weekends. And that's usually when people have time off. And your high season will be Christmas, New Year's, Martin Luther King weekend, President's Day weekend, and then the month of March, which is spring break.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yep. Which totally makes sense. So
yeah.
Then on the STRs, like, I mean, there's so much information out there and yeah. I doubt that half of it is even correct. Like, can you just buy anything out there and do a short-term rental on it? I've heard things about licenses in Summit County. Availability can be a challenge. This new tax law that's scaring the crap out of people, the tax them like commercial property, as they, you know, crack down on Airbnbs, hotel lobbyists, however, you know, you want to shake it out. What's those little nuances of things if someone wants to buy? Can, like, you just make anything in Airbnb?
The short answer is no. And Alex, we could do a 3-hour podcast on this. And this is kind of also my hot button issue, because I've been working in this and watching the different jurisdictions make decisions and writing reports about it and writing articles about it. So I have a bunch of information on this, but I'm going to give you high level. The short-term rental industry is under fire. And it's happened because of affordability. Kind of the start of it. We know that housing affordability is an issue in Colorado, but really everywhere across the nation. When you have 35,000 total properties in a community, we don't have a lot of properties. So local government leaders have jumped on the bandwagon. There's different organizations and governments doing this across the country, but kind of pointing the finger at short-term rentals being the problem or a problem in taking housing out of the stock that would be available for locals, for local use or more affordable housing. Okay, so that's the bottom line. We're seeing the Colorado legislature. We'll talk about that bill in a minute. We're seeing it there, but we've definitely seen it in our local government. So in Summit County, the trickery is that there are 7 different jurisdictions that govern these rules. So we have 7 sets of rules. Okay.
That sounds fun.
It's fun. We literally have a flow chart for this that we share with people. If we're saying, okay, if you want to try to dissect the short-term rental situation, here's the procedure you need to follow. So within those 7 different jurisdictions, if it depends on where your property sits, in which jurisdiction it sits, then you're going to be subject to different rules. And the strictest rules right now are in Summit County unincorporated. And then Breckenridge has 4 zones. So zones 2 and 3, those are the places where it's really the hardest, or it's going to take years and years to get a short-term rental license. So what we do, and I'm just not going to talk about those details anymore, but the way we help clients is we will say, okay, must you have a short-term rental? Must your property be able to short-term rent? And if the answer is yes, then we just put searches, we create searches for them that only have those properties. And then they're limited to that. And then they understand that what they're seeing is what they can rent. And it's not 100%. We've been in this environment for a couple years, and you know, as a realtor, that the MLS search ability is it's not 100%. You know, we do our best to try to carve out which ones can be rented. So we have to work really closely with buyers on this. And they might see something that comes up on Zillow or realtor.com, and they'll say, what about this? It says it's in the town of Dillon, and Dillon can short-term rent, right? And I was like, oh, that's not real Dillon. That's fake Dillon. Because it's not in the town limits of Dillon, but it's in the Dillon zip code. So it's in Summit County unincorporated. So it is, I guess I would say if you're coming into this, you're a buyer and you're coming into this and you want a short-term rental and you think you're going to go find a property on your own, I'm going to tell you it is going to be tough. You really need to bring in a professional because it's very nuanced.
Yeah. No, it's hard.
Can I answer your question?
I mean, yeah, no, it does beautifully because that's the type of stuff I get. And I mean, I'm in the business. I'm here in Denver. Like, we've got our own rules around short-term rentals, but knowing that it's so different market to market, like, I would be the first to tell you I'm not the best to help you find a short-term rental in Summit County. No way. Like, you need to specialize. You need to know this stuff. It is kind of a club, you know, on the information, access to information. What's coming down the pipeline? Like, and what rules are potentially going to be put in place that could affect you in a year, right? And now all of a sudden you're like, all these units just popped up for sale in this little nook. Well, because they're about to build a warehouse behind you that no one knows about except for people who understand the market really in depth, right? So, which kind of brings me to, so forgetting just about short-term rentals for a second, like, and because people may realize, hey, maybe we have to buy this outright. Maybe it takes us a year or two to be able to get approved for a short-term rental. Like, where are you seeing opportunities in Summit County that, you know, have that potential for more growth? You know, I know here in Denver 10, 15 years ago, it was looking at Golden was like the, you know, adopted stepchild of Boulder, right? No one wanted to be there. Look back today and you're like $500 a square foot. That's right. The price. Like, we missed. Yeah. Like, is there anywhere in Summit County, or maybe it's right outside of Summit County, where you're potentially seeing opportunities for more growth than where has already exploded?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're very landlocked here. So Summit County is, I think, 75-78% national forest. So we don't have a lot of land where you can say, oh, there's going to be this new spread of a development somewhere. So just want to say that we're not going to find a place where there's going to be big tracts of new housing. You might see that in Grand County, you know, like in the Fraser, Granby, Winter Park area. They have more land that can be built. So I think that probably where we're seeing the most growth and opportunity right now is along Highway 6 in Silverthorne, going north out of town. That was very, very industrial. And we've seen land that was not at its highest and best use, right, being built into multifamily with commercial. And so Silverthorne, as a town, along this highway, this four-lane highway, is really growing into more of a community. And then on one side of the highway, there's the Blue River. Blue ribbon fishing, right? If you're a fly fisher person, you know, that's a big deal. So we've got this beautiful river, and we've got all of this new construction going on with a bike path being put in. I think that that's where we're going to see probably the most opportunity and also future growth for a community. Secondarily, you know, in terms of pricing, we have another thing going on here in Summit County, which is insurance costs. This is probably everywhere, right? But we have large projects that have seen their insurance double, triple, quadruple. So now HOA fees are higher. And so the area, Wilderness, it's called. So this is just adjacent to Silverthorne, but not in the town of Silverthorne. It's fake Silverthorne. It's Summit County. We're seeing a lot of price pressure on those units, mainly because of the HOA fees. So, I mean, if you're risk tolerant and you're saying, wow, I can now, this unit used to be $750 and it's selling for $500 because of the HOA fees, you might be able to say, huh, that might be a risk I'm willing to take. I might be willing to pay these high HOA fees and hope that the insurance commission gets this insurance figured out and hope that the short-term rental licensing will loosen up and I might be able to get a license up here, you know, in the next 10 years. Maybe we'll get new commissioners and they'll change their rules. Maybe they'll review the rules and say that it didn't accomplish what they wanted to accomplish. I don't know, right? But there could be some opportunity there for people who are willing to take some risk on that. So
Yeah. So what I hear you saying is overall, you've got to want to be in Summit County.
Yes.
Right. And yeah. deal with everything you might have to deal with that might not go your way because you want to be in Summit County, which it's a great place. I mean, we go up there all the time. It's our, you know, I talk with a lot of clients moving in from out of state and we joke like we only go out of state once every other year for a vacation. Other than that, our vacations stay in Colorado.
It is true. I have this little saying, my little joke, that if it weren't for the mountains, Denver would be Kansas City. You know, people come here and they move here, and a lot of it's for lifestyle, and even, you know, in the whether it be the foothills or the mountains. So it does make things more expensive and it does make things more complicated. But the real win on Summit County real estate is on the back end. And if we look back 30 years and calculate the average appreciation per year, it's something like 7.8% per year. It's substantial. And it used to be like 6.5% per year. Then COVID hit and we had the run up in pricing and the demand. And so I think it's now like at 7.8% annually over the last 30 years. So, and Alex, with that, without the ability to really build a lot more property, we're stuck in that kind of 35,000-ish number. Sure, we might be able to add a few more hundred, but we're not going to be able to add 30,000. The lack of inventory and the inability to build keeps our properties scarce. So, so I think that if you do have the wherewithal, if you do have the risk tolerance, if you do have the ability to say, you know what, I guess I can kind of subsidize this for a while, you win on the back end with the appreciation.
Yeah, 100%. We are a high appreciating market all here in Colorado. Yes. And I know that after, you know, my family is from Chicago originally, as you know, and like the appreciation is not the same, like at all. Like, yeah, they're still on a good trajectory for them, right? But you look at things like population growth, right? Chicago has had a flat population since the 90s. Yeah. Right. We have not. Their property taxes are through the roof. We're the third cheapest in the country statewide for property taxes. Like your dollars go towards the house. And, you know, yeah, we're growing fast and people are going to complain about traffic and all that stuff. But you're either growing or you're dying. Right. And Summit County has been, you know, just high on the radar for a lot of people. So I just this has been awesome. So you mentioned HOAs. What I know what to expect here in Denver, right? I know non-warrantable. I know, you know, $250 is on the cheap side per month for an HOA that you actually get something. What are HOAs like there on average dollar-wise? Does it change much? Single family, you know, snow removal, I'm sure is a huge part of that. Like, what do I expect with an HOA? Are they nightmares like they can be down here in Denver? Like, talk to me about HOAs.
Yeah. I think they're a huge benefit because one, most people don't live here. Who's going to take care of this stuff? Someone's got to take care of it. So that they're essential. Number two, what we find with a lot of the HOAs, mostly condo HOAs, right, is they work to try to reduce costs by getting group internet, for instance, group cable. So you'll find it is probably customary for a two bedroom, two bath ski condo to have about $750 to $1,000 a month HOA. But it often includes everything.
Gotcha. Okay? Including insurance? No, probably not insurance, but
includes insurance. You would just have your drywall in, you'd have your HO6 policy, which is cheap, right? But yeah, it would include insurance too. So when you start to peel off the other costs, you know, if you live in Denver and you have a single family home, you're like, how much do I pay for cable? How much do I pay for internet? How much do I pay for trash, water, sewer, heat, electric, all those things, you know? And so it ends up, it sounds expensive, but then at the same time, you get a lot for it. A lot of times these buildings too have swimming pools, hot tubs, underground parking, on-site management. So that makes it easy for you to lock and leave. And it also makes it easy for your guests and for your renters to have a good experience because everything is being taken care of. So that's, you know, certainly there are going to be some issues with HOAs. You can't get around it. But I think up here, I think it's more of a benefit than a detriment. And like I said, what we're seeing with some HOAs is that because they're insuring such large projects, the insurance costs are skyrocketing. So that's really a hot topic in our market right now, where you would have an HOA that was maybe $500 or $600 a month, and now it's over $1,000 just to cover the insurance.
Wow. Yeah. I'm hearing that throughout the country. Yeah. Florida, I've got a buddy in San Diego who now can only get a state approved policy. Ooh. And it's not like, and he's in fire territory, and he went from $400 a month a handful of years ago. He's up to, you know, $1,600 a month for his single family. And you're like, what is going on here? And he's like, my policy doesn't even cover anything, you know? So yeah, I don't exactly know the details of what's going on insurance wise, but I've heard it all across the board. Vehicle insurance, same deal. Like, we're having this interesting insurance pinch. That's interesting to hear.
I'm not as close to it to know what the solution is or what's being done. We did have the Colorado Insurance Commissioner come talk to our local realtor association, and he's just said, you know, we're working on it. We're doing everything we can, but I don't know what that means specifically. I mean, I would have to really dig into that.
So now on that topic, HOA, snow, I get people here calling me about Denver, and they assume that we are this, like, we have snow all the time, and that there's, I'm like, no, we get snowstorms and then it's gone in 2 days because it's blue sky and it's 70 degrees the next day. Okay, but you guys get real snow, right? I've lived in the mountains before. I know what it's like. I've been stuck. Like, snow extreme. How long do you get snow throughout the year? Tell me from firsthand experience living up there and the challenges people go through with snow.
I like this topic because I think until you live it, you don't get it, right? I always say the snow starts to stick after Halloween and it's gone by June 1st. So it's about that long. And a lot of the times it just doesn't melt, right? So from, let's just say, November to March, the snow's not melting. And so we have to pay a lot of money to relocate snow. It sounds crazy, right? But we're relocating snow. Our town relocates the snow off the streets and puts it on a big pile at our marina. You know, sometimes your driveway, just like, it gets too high, you have to have somebody come in and just relocate the snow. So when you're talking just about costs and HOA costs or things you need to consider in buying a house up here, our high season is summer. So people buy homes up here in the summer and they don't even see the snow. But I just suggest that you consider snow removal as one of the things you're going to consider, along with the roads that you're going to be on. So if you're on an unpaved road, it will be snow packed. And then when it melts, it's going to be kind of muddy. So it's half the year.
What's the best story you got about snow? I know I've got mine, right? Have you ever been stuck in a random place? Like, what's, or maybe a client, maybe a friend or something. Like, I know you've got something.
I want to hear your story first.
Oh,
your best snow story.
Okay, totally. So you remember, it must have been 10, 12 years ago, we had two rounds right before Christmas. We had a 3-footer. I was living in Rollinsville at the time. Okay. So if you don't know Rollinsville, to my audience, it's about 20, 30 minutes outside west of Boulder. Okay. And Boulder was kind of where I worked and everything, lived up in the mountains there. And we had a snowstorm come in that was about 3 feet. It was snowing 1.5 to 2 inches an hour, and it snowed for like 2 days straight. It was,
I remember.
Oh my gosh. And then 1 week later, almost to the day, we had it again. So we in Rollinsville is a large town. It's got a post office and a bar. And the bar was open, and you had to crawl through a 3-foot hole that they dug to get into the bar. Like fire hazard extreme, I'm sure it was. I mean, you were walking by and you'd see mounds on peak to peak highway there, and you'd feel responsible because everybody had to walk. You felt responsible to clear off the window to see if someone was still in their car.
Oh, right.
And so you do it to one and then you're like, shit, there's another one like 20 yards away. We better go check that. And it was snowing so fast that you just couldn't keep up with it. Yeah. And I had to get down to catch a flight back to Chicago. I had all my neighbors coming out. I took my snowboarding gear with me. I had flares and I had a bottle of Jack Daniels. And I had to get down Boulder Canyon because once I start going, like, there's no one else on the road. Right. I was plowing snow with my car the entire way down Boulder Canyon just to get out of that place. Like I had like 3 days before my flight and I was like, I don't know if I can get out. So during that second storm, that's when all my neighbors had to push me down the street as I was plowing to get on the main road and hopefully I made it down.
I love that. Yeah, mine's not that great. I would say we had a commercial building. We actually developed it into townhomes, but we had this commercial building that was just surrounded with dirt. Like it didn't have pavement or anything. So I just was kind of talking about snow melt and dirt. But what would happen is it would snow so much, had a flat roof. We'd have to remove the snow off the roof. But throughout the winter, when it came time for thaw, it would thaw and freeze and thaw and freeze. So we would have these giant lakes. And it sat kind of on a hill, not a big hill, but the drainage, town drainage, this is in Frisco, the town drainage would go down the hill. But because it was like this big ice patch, we had to do what was called trenching, which means we had to pickaxe a trench so the water could run down the road. And so my husband and I, when my kids got old enough, we bought them pickaxes. And they're like in grade school. They're in grade school. We're like, I think they'll be fine. And we would take them to the building and be like, kids, it's time to trench. And we did for years. And it's still in the family about trenching. And we still joke about it. You know, if we see a pickaxe, we're like, it's time to go trenching. But it was a family affair to chop a route, a river, to get the water drained from lakes, which would be like this deep. I mean, you would step in it and just be in a lake. So that's my snow story. It's like snow melt story.
Yeah. And people need to know this stuff. I mean, coming from other cities and states where, you know, you have, you know, my wife, she used to do snow removal down here in Denver and like they were on it, man, half an inch. You better clear that out. And you go up to the mountain communities and you're like, there's 3 inches snow packed here on the ground and no one cares. So it's just a different lifestyle and what to expect. And I'm sure there's a lot of shock from people at, you know, what they actually get. Like it's the mountains, like, and it's the high mountains. Like you got to work around this stuff.
It is. It's extreme. And we have seen a lot of the, I call them COVID refugees. So people, you know, we're kind of in a bubble up here, right? You get out of the city, you think it's going to be this magical place. And we did see a bunch of people come in and they've since left. The winters, they weren't ready for the winters. And many people have stayed and they love it. You know, it tends to be people who are more into the snow sports and who can embrace it. If you can embrace it, and you love to ski, you love to Nordic ski, you like to hike in the snow, you don't mind the cold, you'll love it up here. It is beautiful. If you don't embrace it, you're fighting it for like over half the year. I'm not lying.
You're not going to win. You're not going to win.
You're not going to win.
All right. So crystal ball time, right? Everybody asks, where are we going? What are we doing? I know my crystal ball's been half wrong for the last 4 years. I thought we were going to crash during COVID, sold 14 properties mid-renovation. Like we were wrong, right?
I was wrong too.
Yeah, totally. Like it's a whole economy shut down. How the heck were we supposed to know what was going to happen?
I know.
So where are we going from here? How bad are interest rates going to get? Are we going to have a crash and flush? Like, what's your take next five-ish years of what's going to happen up in Summit County?
Yeah, so I probably should order a new crystal ball.
Let me know who you get this from.
Yeah, I don't know if Amazon guarantees the accuracy of their crystal balls. But I mean, I was wrong about COVID too. I was like, we are dead in the water. What am I going to do? I should probably get some new skills. Do I have to go practice law again? I don't know. But in fact, I was completely wrong, because we end up being a very desirable place to be. So it was opposite. It was very, very busy. Prices went up 75%. And a property came on the market like yours, you know, you're mid renovation and selling it. I could barely hit enter on the MLS and had offers. So we're down from that now. We're back to a more reasonable market, as I mentioned in the beginning of this podcast. But I've been waiting for signs of any sort of breaks. What is happening? Am I seeing big jumps in pricing? Am I seeing jumps in days on market? Am I seeing, Alex, it is so steady. I can't tell you. So my crystal ball is saying, I think we're just going to be kind of at smooth sailing, at even. Interest rates definitely have less of an effect on us up here. We are a lot of more people pay cash up here. I think the last time I looked at the title company stats, it might have been 45%. So the financial wherewithal of our buyers up here tends to, the interest rates don't affect them as much. They might have the cash and they're just looking to place it. They might pull out money on their home. You know, interest rates are higher on that too. But my crystal ball is saying we're just going to pretty much stay even. We're not going to see huge jumps in appreciation, but just a slow uptick, maybe a couple percent a year. And that's going to be, there are some sectors we're going to see more softening. And that's what I mentioned to you before with those high HOA fees.
No, I'm in the same boat long as inventory is controlled, right? With high interest rates, right? Moderate interest rates, right? Mm-hmm. Until the supply and demand gets out of whack somehow, like what can possibly change? And I just don't see where inventory is going to come from magically. Doesn't happen.
And the demand keeps going up. I mean, I think, while I don't have anything at my fingertips to explain this, I just know that we have a lot more buyers. We have this whole generation looking to find a place to live and a place to purchase. And we just don't have enough housing in Colorado and in the entire country to accommodate the number of households that need a place to live. So that's just going to be controlling the supply and demand. And I don't think we can build our way out of that. I think we're just going to have, you know, there's going to be a cutoff. There's a point of income where people can afford to buy. And then there's the point of income where they can't. And those people are renters until they get to the place where they can buy. Yeah. Or until they find, you know, a realtor or somebody who can help them with down payment assistance or, you know, let's get you into a home. But up here, you know, we definitely have the affordability issue, but we're more of a, so much of our properties are second home, vacation homes. So, and that's mainly what I focus on. We do have a whole sector of deed restricted housing for locals. I just don't work much in that market. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, Amy, this has been fabulous. And of course, we're going to have your contact information here, folks. What is your preferred way of someone reaching out to you if they do have more questions about a mountain property?
My email is best. My email is amy@amynakos.com. And I check my email pretty religiously, and we will get back to you. me or somebody from my team will get back to you with the answers to your questions. I also, on my website, have all of my old newsletters. So a catalog of those. So if you're looking for information on Summit County real estate, you can go there. I have a lot of ways to be reached, but email's best.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you again, Amy. We appreciate having you on. And ladies and gentlemen, until the next time, happy housing.